The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
Welcome to, what do we call ourselves again? This is our first podcast of the year.
Oh my goodness. 2017 is starting us off with a bang. Well, first we say your name. I'm Brent, and
I'm Lydia.
And we're talking Starman.
Yay, Brent and Lydia talk Starman.
It's way too complex of a name. Wait, there's moving parts and, you know, yeah.
Excuse me.
It's our 23rd episode.
Yep. But we're on chapter... No, not chapter. You see? You see what the holidays have done to me?
Curse you!
Issue 21.
Holidays? Yes, issue 21.
Yeah. I don't know what it... Oh, wait, I do. I got confused because they're like two groups of text on the cover. It says, Sand and Stars. Part 2 of 4.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this has a cover date of August of 96. And,
yay!
And you know what I did? I looked into August 96.
Yay! Does it say Lydia turns 8?
It did not.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I was born in August, you guys.
We expect flowers come August. Flowers!
Flowers? Are you quoting the first page or something?
Does it say what? Flowers on the front? Is there? Oh, well, right. Yes.
A
yeah.
Little bit.
Boy, yeah. No, I'm not thinking of the first page. I'm just thinking that girls like flowers. And I was thinking, like, wait a minute. Maybe she doesn't want flowers for her birthday in August. Maybe she wants something else.
I always want things. So flowers count as things. But there are several things that are better than flowers. But I don't mind flowers. Because I actually got flowers for my last birthday. My 27th. Was that 20? Wait, 28? What? Oh, wow, that means this comic is 20 years old.
Yeah.
That, no, well,
it's
more
than
that.
20 years old.
More than that.
And yeah. And in the future, when people listen to this, because we know they are, it'll be even older.
Yeah. Well, 19. I was just thinking though, 1990s. What kind of technology was there in the 90s? And then I saw this issue with. It was already quite high tech.
kind of. You know, one thing I can tell you, due to looking into what was out that date, is you know, Netscape, the browser that no one uses anymore. It's what, volume 3, third edition, was put out in August of 96.
Mm.
So that was, like, big news. Wow.
I know. When I was in school, I just happened to tell the technician, because there was a guy at in my primary school who just, you know, his job was just look after all the computers.
Mm.
I just happened to say, you know, at home I have both Internet Explorer and Netscape. And he was like, whoa, really? I was 7 or something. That's why he was very impressed.
Netscape and, yeah. Oh, also, not only Netscape, but Microsoft released Internet Explorer 3.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. Those were the two. Those are the two that were out. They're warring, vying for dominancy.
And I had both of them.
I think I was more of a Netscape fan, I think. Mm. Was Netscape the one that had, like, the pirate, or the, like, the wheel of the ship on it?
I think so. Yeah. You're talking about, like, the steering wheel of the ship, right?
Yeah. Which I feel like so, it has a better name, but now I can only think steering wheel to a ship.
I know the name in Chinese.
You know,
it doesn't make any.
if I thought I could get that sound correctly, I'd like, yeah, let's teach it. But then every time I try and say Chinese, I do just butcher the language unmercifully.
All right, don't worry though. It's We're going to find out what it is in English very soon, because I bet both of us are trying to Google right now.
No, I've given up. I'm happy in my ignorance.
Alright, no problem. I'm looking at the Chinese word, okay. that's how I came here, and then I realized that it's the same kanji in Japanese, so
so we can tell them it in two language. Unfortunately, neither of those languages are the go-to language for this podcast.
Well, is it called the helm? I don't know.
No, the helm is more the area where the steering wheel would be.
Oh, it's the mechanism, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not the rudder either. It's,
no, that would be the thing, the wheel moves.
You know what? I actually think it's called the wheel.
I say we go with that.
Yeah, the wheel of the ship. Yeah, I think so. All right, guys, that's our deviation.
You know what else came out in August of 96?
Tell me, Brent, what else?
MTV2.
What is the two? Okay, but a little bit of backstory. My parents were, like, very strict, so I wasn't allowed to listen to pop music.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so I didn't really have an interest in English language pop music anyway. So while we did have the MTV channel, I really wasn't interested in it because I liked all the Japanese stars. So tell me, please, what is MTV2?
Well, you know, MTV, the music television network, came out. Mm-hmm. You know, it featured mostly rock videos or just music videos for a long, long time. And then slowly, it started having more and more, I guess, effectively, it's reality TV stuff, like different game shows and, you know, the thing where the people live in the house, the real world, and road rules and other things like that.
Was there a show called Pranked or something?
Probably.
Yeah, it might have been MTV. That might have been the only show I saw, Ashton Kutcher or something.
Yeah, I don't know when or where that came out. But like they started putting all the reality TV on it, and so then the time that actually got devoted to videos was lessened. And then MTV2 was launched, and I'm pretty sure, if memory serves, that one of the main points of MTV2 was so that it could actually have just more videos. Go back to being like, yeah, music television all the time. And I'm also fairly certain that now MTV2 basically just shows reruns of the old reality TV shows anyway. So, I guess because now if anyone wants to watch a music video, you just go to YouTube and like type in the name of the video and it's there.
Yeah, it's on demand. You don't have to wait for the lineup to show it. It's great. Internet!
Yep. And there's one more important thing that kind of came out in 96.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Game of Thrones.
The book.
The first book in the Song of Ice and Fire by George R.R. Martin. That came out in 96.
So it's 20 years old
or already. More.
Yeah. Okay.
And I didn't actually read the books until I think it was when the third one came out. I didn't even know about them, but my roommate at the time when the third one came out, this would have been early 2000s, he had read the books, and he was like, "Oh, you've got to read them. You'll love them." And so yeah, that's when I started reading them. But the first one came out 96. Here you go.
Nice. Yay. Thank you.
You're welcome. For
that little bit of education. I'm not being, what's that word where you pretend to be? Where you
facetious.
Pretend to, yes. Thank you, facetious. No, I'm just kind of like what they say in Japanese, low tension right now. I mean, what's that? You kind of mellow because, I don't know, I'm just really warm right now. Okay, it's one of the coldest periods in Japan.
Oh my goodness.
And so I have made myself really warm. That means I'm very sleepy. But it's all right because I'm going to, you know, get to my part of the podcast right now, which is the synopsis.
Yay.
All right. Interestingly, because this we had a really long break, so
yes,
I had
we did.
To
like a good month.
Yes, maybe more. Mm. I think so. I had to quickly go skim through part one of Sun. What, Sand and Stars?
Sand and Stars.
Sand and Stars. So, okay, just a little bit of I'm just gonna go right in.
Synopsis
for part two of Sand and Stars. So we pick up right after where we left off last issue. So this Mr. Blaine was killed while Jack was at Wesley, Dodd, and Diane's apartment. He was, you know, being a fanboy and stuff like that, if you remember.
Yeah.
And then here, I can't remember, though, what Wesley's nickname is. You know, his superhero name?
Sandman,
thank you. That's why Sand is in the title. Okay, got it. So, Starman is at Sandman's house, and his neighbor or something gets killed, right? And here we see, in this part two, we see Wesley Sandman. He's investigating. He shows off his detective skills by analyzing the events leading up to the murder of this Mr. Blaine. So I don't know how he has all this information, but he's like playing detective. And a few new characters are involved, and we see a new mystery emerge.
Mystery.
Yes. So Jack goes on his end of the investigation. So they all have like they kind of like little roles where they have to play, Diane and Wesley and Jack. And Jack witnesses another murder. Well, not that he witnessed Blaine's, but he witnesses this guy, Jason, getting killed. And this is instrumental in helping him figure out his next course of action. Basically, now he has to infiltrate the base of Blaine's partner, Gail. Only Gail's facility is heavily guarded. That's why I talked about technology just now. Wesley and Diane watch over him as he enters the place, but little do we know, things don't go as smoothly as they hoped.
No.
Yes. Oh, and we also learn a little bit about Ted's past. Ha ha! Not gonna tell you at this point, but...
No.
Yes, so that's my, as much as possible, spoiler-free synopsis.
Thank you. So if you haven't read the issue, of course, go listen. Go read the issue, and then come back, and we'll talk more.
Yes. Okay, spoilers now!
Oh man, I can't believe you want to start with the cover?
Okay, yes. Start with the cover. When I saw this cover, I was like, is that an Oni mask?
It looks like one.
right?
Yeah.
But there's no context. After you read the thing, you're just like, why is this on the cover?
Yeah, like, you know, I mean, this is not my favorite cover. It's because, you know, it's got stuff that seems like it should work, but like you said, like, there's the Oni masks, but they're in such a way where they make me think of, like, the tragedy comedy masks.
Right.
And I guess this is to deal with the gunmen, but the gunmen really aren't important.
They didn't feature much in this issue.
Yeah. Like,
is this one of those things, like you said, like, sometimes Tony Harris would draw something and then it would just be in advance and it didn't fit with the issue?
Yeah, I mean, who knows how far in advance this cover was drawn, but it could be, like, maybe they thought the gunmen were there, or maybe they thought there would... I don't really know, because even just the balance of it, it doesn't really... It just doesn't really work that well for me. Like, the way his hand is kind of going through it is like, well, is it a dream? Because I guess maybe because Sandman... It feels like there's a lot of good ideas into the symbolism of this cover, but putting them all together just doesn't quite work for me as a whole.
I see. That's too bad. I didn't really feel for this cover like I've had with some others, so nothing much I can say except I like how the magnifying glass thing, it kind of reflects this gas mask thing, that you can think of it as the one that Wesley lent Jack, that's why he's wearing it right now. Or you can also think that of it as Wesley inside the magnifying glass. I don't know.
I like it.
Yeah. I hear a funny sound. Guys, are you listening to this? Because that, I was very sorry about that.
every now and then I hear something like a dip, 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 but I'm not sure if that's on my side or your side.
Yeah.
Hopefully the final product, the sound will be okay. If there is a little stuff, sorry.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I don't want to turn off the heater for this because it's too cold.
Yes. All right then. Is there anything else?
That's all I got.
Okay, page one it is.
Yeah. And right away, like, because of the story, I knew this was Wesley Dodds. But he didn't really look like the same Wesley Dodds
to me. You mean the face something of the Wesley Dodds?
Maybe. Something about the face, but in a way, like, it looked... And later on in the page, it makes me wonder if this was an intentional thing, because he didn't look as frail.
Okay. I see.
Like,
I don't know.
Yeah. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's the coloring, maybe it's something, maybe it's just the fire of it. But it was like, wait, this is supposed to be Dodds, but he doesn't, like, because he looked so much weaker, less passionate in a way. In the last issue, but then at the end of the page they do start talking about how, you know, even to Jack, this Wesley Dodds looks more invigorated, and so I wonder if that was just, there's something subtle about the art or the colors that brings out that makes him look younger.
Maybe it might be the coloring, I don't know, or the way his eyes are drawn or something. I'm no expert. Yeah. But you know what? It's probably one of those things that I don't notice, because I gravitate towards the words and the symbolism and stuff like that. So what's happening in these pages? First, I think we have to address, like, you know, how Jack and Wesley are talking about Blaine's death, right?
Yes.
And then on the other page, they have all the photos of Blaine. And the thing is, I don't know how Wesley got his hands on all of these things.
Yeah, I just took that for granted. I just kind of took it as just like in this particular issue of just kind of thinking like, oh well, he's, you know, Wesley Dodds. He probably has enough friends in the police force and such like that, where if he wants to look at the case file for a murder in the building he lives in, someone will probably hook him up.
Ah, okay. That explains it. Because I was a bit thrown off when I opened this issue, because I didn't remember what really went on in number 20. So I was like, wait a minute, is Wesley part of the police force? I was actually really thrown off a little bit. Yeah. Okay, I get it now.
I don't remember them particularly explaining what happened. Or how he would get this. So I just kind of went like, why would he have it? And kind of just went like, why wouldn't he? He's got connections. He's Wesley Dodds.
I see. All right. But this scene actually reminded me of one of the past issues where Ted, he was playing detective as well, and he like sort of solved a mystery. I can't remember. You know, and he really thought about things instead of going head first into it. Yeah, so that this is like, I don't know, it was like a paid tribute to all ye days of old or something. Yeah.
It's like, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, they are not like old geezers who just retired or anything. They're actually still in the game.
Yeah. And just kind of the I don't know, setting the difference of, in a way, Jack is still, you know, for better or worse, he's still more of an action guy. He doesn't quite know how to be a detective. And, you know, like you said, they talked about his father. His father was a thinking person, and Wesley Dodds definitely was a detective. And so it's kind of another skill that if Jack wants to be a hero, he does have to master.
One thing before we go on, assuming that we're going to move on really soon. I like how the steam from the coffee is green. Yeah. Don't you?
Yeah. I like everything about the steam from it. I like how it's green, how everything has that kind of greeny tone. I like just even the way it's very abundant and floating.
Yeah. That is some really hot coffee. That's probably what he's also trying to say. But nice effect, though. If it didn't have the steam, it but the motion, you know, wouldn't be as pronounced. I really like it.
Yeah. Just
put some motion into your art. All the things that you learn. It's interesting. All right. Do we move on to the next page?
We do. But before we do, let's go ahead and give a shout out to the creators of this issue.
How could I forget? Yes,
which
please.
Is James Robinson, writer, Tony Harris, penciler, Wade Vaughn, Grobiger, inker, Greg Wright, colorist, Oakley, who I believe is Bill Oakley, and NJQ, letterers, Chuck Kim, the assistant editor, and Archie Goodwin, editor.
Nice.
Now, our next page. We just get more talking and lots of little exposition about the murderers here, the possibilities of, like, oh well, it, you know, they the police say it's It's Blaine's wife, Helen. She had a young lover, Jason. But they were seen, which is an alibi, but it seems like a fake alibi. So they because maybe they hired people because of money trails and stuff, and blah blah blah. And you know the dialogue. It's one of those things where it's, to me we keep going back to this well, but it always seems to be true of Mr. Robinson just playing in his strengths. He's able to give this really in-depth dialogue with it while it still has a flow and never feels overly chunky.
Yep.
I mean, this is a lot of exposition here, which is important to the story in that it sets up events, but for the big story, none of it realistically is that important. And yet, it adds a lot of flavoring.
Agreed. Yeah. It can be very hard to write exposition when you're, like, you know, trying to unravel something like that, like a mystery. You're trying to pick apart something, I think. You know, and for someone to be able to do this in a way that it didn't make the reader space out, I think that's very impressive. So that's what James Robinson has done. Yep. I think. Yeah. I really admire him for it.
And we gotta, if we're passing out the compliments, we also gotta talk about Tony Harris does a great job of a page that is essentially just a bunch of talking heads. Of keeping it visually interesting.
I know, right?
You have the different angles and the, like, looking, not looking and talking at each other, but, like, looking at the pictures. Jack examining the coffee cup with, you know, maybe it's, like, makes me wonder, like, oh, all those symbols. Maybe it's a slightly scented coffee, or maybe it's even tea. You know, just the way things float back and forth, where it's not just, I'm talking.
And I love how you know who's talking at the bottom two panels just with the hands. Like, I don't know, like, you know that this is Wesley's hand because it is wrinkled and old. And it's manly, you know, and and I don't know, it's a very, it's one of those things that can only happen in comic books. You know, a shot like this in a film or something, it might seem very strange paired with this dialogue. So it works in this medium. I like it.
Yeah. And I also like, I mean, this is just such I feel like this might be a small thing, but I like how Diane is included in this conversation in such a way where she doesn't feel like a hanger-on to me. And I'm not sure if that's just because I've read too many of the other issues where she's featured. But she feels like a part of, you know, here's these two superheroes talking, and oh yeah, the girl getting them coffee. But it doesn't feel like that. It feels like, no, this is a trio, and she's just as important to this conversation as they are.
I get what you mean. Yeah, that's something that I did not realize. You know, I just completely ignored. When I was reading, I mean, I just completely ignored Diane's appearance in the first square at the top left. And then when she was given that one square by herself, I was like, oh, Diane's here. Yeah, so I was like, oh, okay, so she's like doing her, because she's like some big shot writer, right? So I was like, oh yes, right, she's that big shot writer. So that's why she weighs in. I like it. Yeah, and she's pretty much, you know, being the boss of her own little detective thing throughout the story. So that was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, and I guess really after the division of labor happens with what is it?
Diane going to see Helen and
Wesley going to see Gail.
Yeah.
And Jack going to see there. They split up. So should we continue to follow their individual journeys?
Yes, let's do it. Jing.
Yay.
Oh, but one shout out to Diane again.
Yes.
Because she had to explain that trope, that pop culture thing to Wesley.
Mm.
About Archie Goodwin.
Yes,
and I thought that was really cute because, you know, Diane and Wesley, they aren't very young, but Diane knows her stuff. It's like you go to your, it's like talking to your grandma and grandpa, and you tell your grandpa, hey, grandpa, that's lit. And then your grandma is able to explain what lit is. I think that's really cool.
I like it. I like the explaining, and I kind of like Wesley's face of like, he doesn't really need to know.
Yeah.
Oh, it's from, you know, somehow I just like the idea just based on that face, that for all his various interests, detective fiction is something that Wesley just doesn't really care about. He's like, I've done the real thing. I don't need to read.
Yeah, I got really, yeah. Okay, now we can move on.
Yep. So, I mean, these next couple of pages, with Jack's journey, pretty much it's basically up until the violence happens, it's just like a little diatribe, or not, maybe that's the wrong word, of just Jack's thoughts on age.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that it was Jack talking until much later. I thought it was Jason. But, you know, it makes sense now because they didn't have that speech bubble thing. It was a narration bubble. It was colored in yellow. But yeah, you know, you have this page where Jack's spying. He's spying on Jason.
Yeah.
But a little bit of, you know, I like how we see opal architecture again in this page.
But I don't think this is opal.
New York, right?
Yes.
Well, I missed architecture, I guess. When I saw the what do you call it? Checkered floor.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
I was like, hey, wait, it's opal again. Okay, but maybe that was what threw me off. Yeah, I like the way the art is drawn on the first three bits where it's the same, basically it's the same person, but with the sizes and the zoom in, zoom out kind of.
Yep, with the camera, like, slowly pulling out.
Yeah. That was fun. And you kind of like know that it's always the same, it's the same guy at the bottom, but you know that Jack is spying on him because there's the silhouette there in the window. And that was I don't know, just kind of genius to me.
I like it too.
Right? Okay. Yeah, good. Yeah. No. I know, there's a lot of detail to these things, like some lights are switched off, some lights are on, and one light on, you know, there's some rooms are switched off, and some lights in some rooms, and just detail, it's amazing, I'm just very impressed, these are comic books, you know, I'm still, it's just one of those things that I never really noticed about comic books because I hadn't read many, but now I've read 20 over comic books. Just the 20 over.
And the artistry of them, it is really, really good how they're using techniques to kind of let you follow the action and know, okay, now you're kind of seeing it through Jack's eyes and backing up, and there you got your shot, so you know exactly where things are going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it, yeah, the way they kind of play with the angles with this and the next page, and now that we know where Jack is and what he's looking at, we can give you that kind of over the head and then from underneath him, the shots of Jack, because we know what he's doing now.
Yep.
You know?
Mm. And one thing that we might want to just, you know, copy in our memo, it might be how Jack is afraid of dying.
He's
not afraid of death itself, but he's afraid of aging into nothing. And I think this might be something that will come back to sort of like haunt us when we want to analyze his later actions. I don't know.
Yeah, no, just the, or just even how he relates to, I mean, to those around him. I'm thinking especially his own father. Like, you know, right now, in the series, Ted is very able and very capable, but you know he is older, and who knows when or if older will turn into something that Jack finds painful, as he mentions here, you know, with the mentioning about Cagney and Rita Hayworth, when they get older, it gets painful to remember them. So who knows how Jack will respond to those around him?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, next.
Is that a sudden action noise?
Just mimicking the ambulance in the background.
Oh, you can hear it? Yes. I live in Tokyo. Tokyo is known for many great things. One of them that is not so great is lots of noise. So between the ambulances and the potato truck and all those other things, I get lots of random noises on my podcast, and some people say, you know, Brent, if you were more serious about podcasting, you should edit those out. And instead I say, no, let's not edit them. Let's discuss them like they're an integral part of the comic reading experience. Yes,
you know Brent. What? Very coincidentally, the next few pages, that we're going to talk about, it's mostly sound effect.
Booda, 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 booda.
Yeah.
Crash.
Like, guys, I'm seriously not kidding you. It's just action.
Yup. And Jack's flying. Figures.
Wait, with his rod, right? Yes, okay, yes. He's holding his rod.
Yes.
Yes, this is where... that I actually didn't realize that the second panel was of Jason dying until I went closer to look, because it was just kind of gruesome.
Yep. the red and the broken glass, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, but my, I'm guessing it's like bullets, right?
Yes. You could
just, fired several rounds in him. Mm-hmm. You know, because I write stuff as well, and I happen to have researched on gunshot wounds.
Mm.
And apparently there's no really safe place to shoot. Like, there's to be shot, to get shot. Like, the chances of dying from every shot is actually pretty high.
Yeah.
Unless you get shot in the butt, that's the safest. I mean, you could still die, but that's probably the safest place to get shot. If you want to get shot, you might get paralyzed because it's so near to the spine. But I don't know, if you hear gunshots, just like
stick your butt in the air.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but no, just like hide wherever you just should not get shot at all. Just not at all. That's just
advice to take home. Don't do your best not to get shot, I think.
Yes. And, yeah, so...
I mean, you see, you turn the page, and when the bullets start flying, what does Jack do? He tries not to get shot. It's a very good strategy for him.
Yes.
Although, I gotta say, looking at this, if he's gonna try and get away from bullets, maybe... You know, depending on if what he's flying in front of is a building or a wall. If it's a wall, perhaps on the other side of the wall might have been the safer place.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been the building he was just flying off of.
Yeah, if you look at, like, his trajectory, where they illustrate it with the yellow, I think he might have been jumping off the building. But why?
To try and catch the gunman.
Oh, he's flying towards them?
I think so.
Jack, you should not get shot. But yes, Jack, do your job, Jack. But the gunmen here, they seem very, this is the first time I've realized they're actually wearing suits, like superhero type suits. And he says, oh yeah, as he fires. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of like, it's almost like a taunt, I think. He's trying to get Jack to... He's a bit, you know, perverse in his enjoyment of the action. Yeah. But yes, should we go on?
Sure, because I mean, this is just a quick little thing. Like, oh, I'm getting, and he's gone. Really, yes. With, other than that he's fast, there's no real explanation of, he's here, he's gone. It's just part of the story. You know, almost a little too easy, but sure, why not?
Agree. And there was only just one guy. But anyway, I get what... I get it, because that guy was sent to kill Jason. Jason is silly. Jason is kind of stupid in the later part. So they probably didn't need an infantry to come get Jason, and they didn't expect Jack to be there. But yeah, so Jack, now his next step is to go into Jason's house and get some clues.
Yeah.
And the scene kind of breaks off here.
And we go to Wesley talking with what was this guy's name again?
Gail. That's right, Gail.
And Gail just looks like an old timey aeroplane fat cat.
Yes.
Big cigar and.
He makes some airships. Well, he made airships with Blaine, and that's why Wesley is here to get clues. And apparently, Wesley is a little bit of a hermit right now, because when he gets out, it's like, oh, Wesley, and you got out. Like, everybody's reaction is like, yeah. You're alive. So,
and I mean, that's what I love about that turn from this page to the next page. Is we have this guy really, really kind of just there's something about how he treats Wesley that is kind of like, oh, you're just an old guy. Well, I can just kind of talk, and you're just, I'm like, it's not quite patronizing, but there is a little bit to it. And so then when on the next page, Wesley has that, the line about, are you in danger? I thought Helen Blaine killed her husband for his money. There's that moment, just, there's that sharpness to the eyes and just the dumbfounded look on Gail that, you know, has that whole, like, you shouldn't underestimate me vibe to it.
Yeah. And I really like those panels where Wesley, he just drops it. And there's that, like those beats.
Yes.
With the cigar and the motion. Yeah, that was very cool.
And then just to finish off that page, almost like a mirror image in a way of Wesley in the upper left corner is the guard in the lower right corner with a very, very militaristic helmet and guns. And like, yes, he is an armored troop, but it is kind of an armor that, you know, reminds me of the more of the Axis side of World War II.
Oh, really? I didn't know that there were, you know, Axis type of suits.
Well, okay. There's just something about the design of the helmet.
Right.
And I'm not a big buff on World War II, but there's just something about it that does make me more think of wartime Germany than, say, you know, the good old U.S. side.
I see. You know, I don't know, British, but we were governed by the British, but I don't think I would recognize one if I saw a uniform. I don't know. Yes. I see. All right. So, next page.
Jack being a computer sleuth.
Yes. Good job, Jack, but I really didn't peg him for someone who was very tech.
Yeah, he doesn't really come across as the type of guy who would be that into new computers.
Yes. He would probably collect old computers or, you know, think of maybe in, 10, 15 years he'll come back to get this one, but it's more of like, Jack can type. With three fingers. Yeah. I don't know. Just
and you know, there is something about this that makes me think of, oh, right, 96, back when, well, I mean, even today they do the same thing, so I can't really say it was a 96 thing, but computers can do everything.
Yeah, I know.
Netscape just put out their third edition, and Internet Explorer 3.0 was out. Computers could do anything at that time.
Yeah, they really could. I was just reading up on the, when was the first email or something. What did I Google? I can't remember, but, you know, some of the tech that we think is very recent is actually, it goes back a long way. Yes. Yeah, so good job. And you know, after this, I don't know whether I should. Yeah, I just go ahead and spoil it for you guys. We see that Jack is actually reading an online journal that Jason kept. So that's a blog. That's what we call a blog in the 2000s. But back then, it was probably, you know, a diary. What I can't remember the names of those providers, but you know, we're talking about before LiveJournal, and LiveJournal is already pretty old.
Well, here they refer to it as a computer diary.
That's right. That's what they use. Yes.
Which it does make me wonder. Like, is this? Would it have been like an online blog type thing, or would it have just been basically like a memo file that he treated like a diary? Like a simple text edit or something, you know?
Yeah. You never know. Yeah. Jason. We'll never know.
If only he were alive to ask, but he's not.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, even if you asked him, who knows if he'd understand the question, because the way I hear it, his IQ was a bit more below the waist, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Wow. No, literally, she said it. I'm looking at the page. She's saying it.
Yes. Helen, was it?
Yes, Helen it was.
And was she Blaine's wife? She's Blaine's wife, right?
She's Blaine's wife, who was getting ready to divorce him so she could get half his stuff if no one knew she was with Jason, which does kind of throw the wrench in the idea of they were very publicly seen skiing, but you know,
But yeah. She doesn't think much of him, and she is very, she expresses it very clearly.
Of Jason or of,
Jason.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she doesn't. He's not a smart man.
Yeah. But it's very cool, though, that Diane is the one here talking to her. It's, and she's, like, you know, on her laptop. Yeah. And, oh, I think that was what I googled. When did laptops come out?
Oh, they're old.
Right? I was surprised. I thought it was, like, before... I thought it was at least 2000s, but it was way before that.
I mean, especially because there used to be the ones that were basically kept in suitcases.
Right.
Yeah.
Very cool, though, that... I don't know. If you just look at this scene right here with Diane and Helen, it could take place now.
It really could.
Right?
Yeah.
So, 1996, was it, this issue?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very kind. Good job. Good job, you guys who made this comic. Really cool. Okay, so...
So then we move on to Jack and Wesley just talking about all the different ways that... Well, it just doesn't, you know... How things just don't seem to be adding up, and about how Jason... was selected to start getting the gain. Jason gained access to Helen's bank and was starting to put money through there. Is that what it was?
I thought he was gaining access to her bank.
Yes.
Account. Oh, that's the same thing. I thought it was like records or something, but no, it's the actual bank account. Yes, so you're right. Jason went through Helen to get to Blaine's money.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how exactly he did it, but he was shown how to do it by the bad guys, right? He was shown how to divert the funds from John Blaine's accounts. They wrote it there. So, and funnily enough, Jason, again, okay, maybe not so funny because he's a silly boy. He wrote all this down in his diary. Like, the bad guys taught me this.
Well, again, this is one of those things that's kind of funny because, you know, we talked, or I kind of mentioned earlier about how the failing with Gale was that he underestimated Wesley as just an old man. But here we have Helen, who basically dismisses Jason as an idiot, but he's doing basically, you know, high-tech embezzling and stealing files and such like that with, you know, I mean... At that time, that would have been... You would have had to kind of know what you were doing. So even though he might have been somewhat flaky, and she dismissed him as an idiot, he must have had some type of intelligence to be able to do the type of infiltration
he was doing.
That's but since true, she that's underestimated true. Him, there you go.
Yep. So, wasn't that silly after all?
Yeah. Other than we noted the killer was a Gemini. Which,
yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, it does kind of make me wonder, is all this going to just be so the fact that there's two killers later? We've got the two different masks. We've got the idea of, like, he's faster than that last time. We've got the note of the Gemini here.
Yeah. A little bit foreshadowing, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
And then we get we go into the dream sequence.
Yes, where this threw me off, but it was meant to be, I think. Mm. It's it was really cool. I think it was drawn very colorfully. Is that a word? Yes. So you could immediately see. I was worried on this page because I was like, "No, Wesley, why are you doing this? Mm, you're old." Mm, mm. It's not like old Wesley. It's young Wesley. It's showing him, you know, infiltrating a base or something, and he's like smoking the air, so all these guys are fainting, mm-hmm. and he's being all superhero-y, and you get a close up of his like face and mm-hmm. in the mask, and then boom, you have the next page,
yes.
where like Ted is on this roulette thing, mm-hmm. and he's in danger.
Mm-hmm. Now you want to hear me feeling silly?
Okay, go ahead.
So, we open this page, right? Mm. The first of this two-page sequence. And my first thought with seeing the two guys smoking was like, oh, wow, it's neat. They look like old-timey gangsters or someone from, like, Indiana Jones movies. Mm. Oh, and there's Wesley going, wait a minute, but Wesley's punching people pretty hard. I don't mm-hmm. think old man Wesley could knock this out. Oh, you know what I bet this is? I bet you Jack is wearing the mask and the hat, and I guess he's wearing the hat because he thought, yeah, it would be like an homage. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. So it's Wesley there going through, cool, or it's Jack dressed as Sandman, blah, 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 and that'll be the reveal that it's Jack behind the mask, not Wesley, and then I turn the page and I see the Starman thing, I'm like, wait a minute, I guess it is Wesley, but why would someone dress up Jack in his father's outfit, and then, and right around the time that thought put in there was like, dude, you've read a lot of comics with Wesley Dodd. Why don't you just consider the fact that it's probably a dream? I'm like, oh right, that makes sense. But that was how I went reading through this.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't blame you. It makes a lot of sense now.
I mean, it's a great sequence. It's a great sequence.
It is. And honestly, I like what do you call it? I wouldn't say battle scenes, but I like people who, like on this page where Ted is being held captive on a roulette board, mm-hmm. a giant roulette board. I like these kind of things where people fight in the most unexpected places.
Yeah.
Right?
Like the 60s Batman show.
Yes! Yes. Oh my, I remember those. Yes. So, we don't really get an explanation of why Wesley dreams of this or where they are or whatever, but
Before we get to, because I feel like you're about to move on, one more thing I like about this little dream sequence, no dialogue, no balloons, up until we get the kind of waking up of Wesley.
Mm-hmm.
I just like that little touch, I like.
Mm.
Please carry on.
Okay, thank you. We see that there's that little touch because it's Diane waking Wesley up. Mm. And then we realize that they're in the car. And again, the complete shift of color. It's like, whoa. It's very obvious, you know, in pages like these. Like, oh, yeah, that was a dream. You know, it's amazing. I like
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
So we see them on their way to a place. We don't know where it is yet. Jack is driving. And again, a lot of exposition, a lot of talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about the case.
Mm-mm.
It's about Ted.
Woo!
That was why I said we also find out a little bit of about Ted, a little bit more about Ted. And I think, can we just talk about these two pages at once?
Yes.
Okay. So over here we find out that Ted wasn't as loyal to his wife as we thought.
Yeah.
Because Wesley reveals that there was another superhero, heroine, huh?
Heroin.
Heroin sounds like a drug.
It
Wait,
does
which
sound
one is
like the drug?
Which one is the drug?
Without the E.
The pronunciation, though.
I'm pretty sure they're both heroin.
Really?
It could be my southernism, but yeah, it's heroin and heroin. The drug doesn't have an E at the end, and
yes.
Lady Hero does.
I never knew that they were pronounced the same, though. Mm. Okay.
That's how I've always said it. Feel free to send corrections to my pronunciation to our Facebook page. You can find us, Comic Team International, on Facebook.
Yeah, but you know what? Tomato, tomato.
You're saying it wrong!
So, yes, over here, well, let's just call her Diana. Mm. Lance, Diana. I have this feeling that you would know who she is because they talk about it like all the people in their little superhero group knows her and they refer to each other by name, but I have no idea how she looks like and how her husband, he was like a little, they kind of looked down on him, but he ended up being the hero and stuff like that.
So I know that Diana Lance is she was the original, I believe, Black Canary. Her daughter, Dinah Lance, is the current Black Canary. Black Canary is, depending on which version of the Justice League you're reading, she could be one of the original members of the Justice League, along with, Aquaman and Flash and Green Lantern and Martian Manhunter. Her usual outfit is kind of like, would you call it like a bodysuit? Like a swimsuit looking thing?
Yeah.
Usually with like a leather jacket, boots, and like fishnet stockings.
Right, okay.
So that's her usual outfit. And that's who Diana Lance is, just a quick one. A member, I think she was considered a member of the Justice Society. I can't quite say for sure.
I see. Yeah, so she was married, and so was Ted.
Yeah.
But they had an affair, but it didn't last long.
No.
We're talking about, after they had kids, we're talking about, how both Ted and Diana had kids. So it was one of those things that would be kind of shocking, I think, to a child, to any of their children. And Jack over here, who's hearing Dad, but actually Jack doesn't react like that. And he's kind of cool with it.
This whole scene, it's one of the few times where I really think the way Robinson paints a situation just feels very false.
Really? Okay. Go ahead.
It's just almost from everything. After going into kind of how much sense Wesley still has, To kind of go from yep, I remember the time when your dad was boinking some other lady on the side. Yep. Mm. It's just the way Wesley brings it up almost too casually.
Mm.
Out of nowhere. And then you have that, but then you have Jack being like, nope, I'm really glad that my dad is actually a flawed individual. And I'm glad his flaws, which I've already seen him to be flawed in the past, but I'm glad his flaws have took a form of him cheating on my mother. My saintly mother, who died when I was a child, who when I recently got to meet her past spirit, I was so joyous I openly wept. I'm really glad I can now tie my father into cheating on her. The whole thing just feels... odd. Like, I could see if, like, there's too many just degrees of casualness that kind of add up to go, like, really? Diane's the only one, like, maybe Jack doesn't want to hear it. Like, no, tell me more. If you know any intimate details, just so I know how rotten my father was giving it to her, perhaps maybe while he was supposed to be taking me to a ball game, that would be fantastic. there's just too many degrees of casualness.
I get what you mean. Yeah, it's a little bit, like, why did it have to be this episode, you know? And at this time, why this timing?
Yeah, or I mean, you know, to kind of play the what if game, if he had shared this, and then Jack was a little bit, like, taken aback, and then they could use his kind of shock in a way later just to have him kind of, like, forgiving his dad for it.
Yeah.
It would have felt more like a thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I could throw this in my dad's face, but you know what? He's made his mistakes.
Yeah.
Let me just move on. Like, that would have been a moment. Like, okay, but this is just, I don't know, it almost just feels, yeah, a little too forced, a little too convenient.
I see where you're coming from.
I mean, if you have a different side of it, please.
I don't know whether I have a different side of it. I mean, I never had a father who cheated and somebody told me about it. But you know what? I actually had a grandfather who cheated, and then people told me.
By any chance, did he tell you about this while driving to fight villains?
No.
Because if so, that would be a very pertinent story.
No, but it was just one of those. Okay, I'm just gonna, like, just really gloss it over. It doesn't happen like that, okay? All of you, you know, boys and girls who are listening, when somebody tells you someone has been cheating, usually it's very dramatic. There's a lot of shouting, and people throw things around. And there's a little bit of crying, and somebody slams a door, and the person who's guilty is kind of, like, sometimes drunk. You know, family drama.
So what you're suggesting is this particular superhero action comic might not be the one to base how to reveal a family member has been cheating.
Yes.
You're saying perhaps while driving on a dark road over a bridge might not be the best time to drop shocking news of infidelity.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
I don't think we can top that.
Okay. Yeah, yes. So, Jack is amazingly calm. I admire him for it.
And then we, not only does Wesley Dodds have insight into the personal lives of other superheroes, he also knows the defense systems of Gale's compound, which is good.
Wait, they are... right! They are at Gale's compound. But, again, thing is, I think he just had a pretty informed guess. I think a lot of it is guessing, because he didn't really, you know, obviously, because at the end we see what happened. But he took, like, because Gale was all, I have guards, heavily armored, high tech.
Yeah.
And so he just guessed, and then he lent Jack his mask. Is there a name for this mask or something?
It's gas mask.
Gas mask. So he has this, so he lent Jack this gas mask, and honestly, when he said, it probably smells a bit funny, I don't know, I just imagined the smell, you know? Sometimes when you just accidentally get one of those, I don't know what kind of situations, but I've definitely been in them before. I think it might have been those betting centers where you wear a helmet.
Yeah.
Like when you just wear a helmet of one of those helmets where they are in amusement parks or something, and then you have to put it over your face and it smells bad. I was like, that's the smell.
I've had friends who regularly do like kendo. And some of them have talked about like, yeah, that's the one of the worst things about kendo is actually if you do it on a regular basis, the smell starts getting there, and there's really not so many good ways to get rid of the smell. Because you can air it out to the point where it doesn't smell if you're close to it, but then, yeah, once you put that helmet on, a lot of times, you can still smell it.
Yeah, and, I mean, but, you know, Jack doesn't seem to mind. I like his line.
Smell of history.
Yeah, that line. That was a nice line. I mean, because I'm not like a comic book fan. So when he said that, it kind of like alluded to, oh, okay, this is part of a legacy. You know, it communicates that. Mm-hmm. It gives me a bit of context. So that's fun. That's nice. Yeah. And so after Wesley gives Jack the mask, Jack just kind of like runs in, and I think he underestimates the thing a bit.
Yeah, he gets a little cocky.
Yeah. Is this what passes for security nowadays? That's what he says. And then there's the gas thing, and Jack's just impressed that Wesley foresaw that there was going to be gas.
Yeah.
But
then he turns the page and we get the frizzly.
Nice one. Yes, and he gets electrocuted and he spazzes out on the floor.
And we find out that now it took me a few times with this sequence of page to actually realize, like, because at first I thought it was like an electrified floor. And then finally looking on the last page and seeing that the guard has type of like electric gauntlets.
Yes, yes.
It took me
Yeah, so same. Yeah. It took me just like right before, right as we talked about it. This second time around that I realized that it must have been one of those things.
Yeah.
So I thought it was the fence that was. Electric. Yeah.
And we're left with the whole Jack, like Wesley and Diane kind of say like, well, Jack's probably fine. I'm sure everything will be fine.
Yes. But it's not. Yeah. Yeah, so Gale's got him. You know, the thing about this Starman comic is I don't know for sure where it's all leading. Like, are they all connected, all these little arcs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They are one continuous tale.
Oh, okay. Because, well, just so we can keep our readers updated or whatever you call it, I remember, you know, things like Hope O'Dare, where she's got there's an open thread there, like it's not addressed. And then there's Nash, who's kind of on hiatus right now. We're going to see her later. And then there's Shade and that cop in that other Matt. Dimension. Yep. Matt, that's right. And then we have that boyish haircut lady whom he met in Charity's house.
Right.
There's that too. And when is it all going to come together? And that's And now this new story. Why?
One thing we could argue, speculate, is that because they kind of talked about how the O'Dares in the Shade did this later, that maybe while Jack is here in New York, the Shade and the O'Dares are planning and undertaking their adventure now.
Right, okay. In
so
Opal.
So that could be going on here.
Okay. Cool. All right. That's fun to think about. Yeah. Mm.
So one thing, I guess not one thing, because I'm hearing my birds in the background be like, "You've been away from us for an hour and 15 minutes now. You must come play with us." Overall, what did you think of this particular issue?
Well, again, it was about cool old people. I think that was one thing, and I don't know. It made me feel like Jack is a little bit detached in a way, you know, with the Tet thing and also with everything. He, this whole like putting himself in danger and the dying thing, you know, like he doesn't really have anything to lose because he's the superhero right now. And even if he dies, he's not going to like die a boring death.
Yeah.
So he's very, in a way, it's a kind of like reckless optimism. I don't know. You know?
No, I do, yeah.
So that's what I feel like, in a way, this is an issue that tells us a lot about his personality as well. Yes. How about you? Do you have any take home from this?
Well, I mean, just kind of on the issue as a whole. It's one of those things where I think there's lots of good segments, but I think that in a way the issue as a whole is weaker than the sum of its parts.
Okay.
Because there's lots of little individual moments, but at the end it kind of feels like, well, here we are, here we are with just a bunch of exposition in a way, you know, red herrings that are resolved within the same issue. And I mean, admittedly, with this ending, it is possible that even the fact of Gale being the bad guy, even though he has an army with G on their helmets for Gale, I mean, still, even this could be kind of a red herring, because all we know about the guards is that they took out a masked intruder on private property. I mean, it's still very possible for the guards to be the good guys here.
Right.
Unlikely, but and so it just kind of feels like there was a lot of stuff here, but it was mostly just exposition and rather than telling the story, there felt like too much was dedicated to designing the mystery.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I get what you mean, yes. Okay. Yeah. I just took it very much at face value. It was just like, okay, they're designing the mystery.
and to me, like, again, you know, I mean, that's one of the If this were kind of a different comic, then I'd be like, oh, well, you know, it's still, yeah, it's great. But, I mean, when this is just not one of the stronger issues. It joins like the two or three other times where I've been like, this one left me kind of cold.
Okay.
It's got some great stuff, but this would not be the issue that I recommend to someone to start with.
Yes, definitely, yes. This wouldn't even be the arc that I would recommend someone to
start with. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Because I remember I just have such strong feelings about the Golden Age Sandman that I'm like, I know I've heard this before and I end up liking it. Mm-mm. There's got to be a reason. Maybe the next two parts really make it solid.
Mm. Fingers crossed.
So where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter. That's where I'm most active. But I talk a lot of dumb stuff. So I fangirl too much. So Twitter, my username is Quek Channel. That's Q-U-E-K Channel. And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook and other stuff. Other platforms, but mostly Twitter. You can find Brent there on there as well. Hmm. Brent, what's your username?
It is at Dead Troubadour. Troubadour is T-R-O-U-B-A-D-O-U-R. You can go to my main website of deadlytroubadour.com. And you can find me on Facebook either at the Brent Thomas author page, or you can go to Comics League International. Mm. And recently, you know, for a while there, we've been putting out this show underneath the Comics League International podcast feed. But as of the week that this episode comes out, we've actually started up the podcast just Brent and Lydia Talk Starman. So,
yay! Yeah.
So if any listeners of the show can help help us share that. It's still going to continue to come out with Comics League, but we figured that maybe having its own dedicated podcast would help people find the show. Mm. So hopefully that will help. And if you can send any reviews and ratings to Brent and Lydia Talk Starman, that would be very, very helpful.
Very helpful. Thank you in advance. Huzzah. Oh, and Patreon. Did you
talk about? I didn't talk about my Patreon.
Yes.
I would love. I have a Patreon page to help support my writing, help support my podcasting. Putting a little bit of a change in the tip jar, even $1 a month, makes a good amount of help. And just, you know, let me know that I'm doing an okay job. Mm-hmm. So, and that if you just go to Patreon/Brent Thomas. That should be it. Mm. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all different URLs, but
I know. That's why most of them are in the podcast notes. You should be able to get those straight there with links on your iDevice. And even if they're, you know, there's definitely a link to take you to Lydia's, I think it's your main YouTube page. It's been a while since I've clicked on that. And if you click on my name, it'll take you to my main website. And from there, it's just easy peasy to find out where you can help us out.
Yay.
Yay.
Okay. I'm Lydia.
I'm Brent. And we just talked Starman.
Yay. See you next issue.
Bye.
Bye.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.